In a world of stereotypes, being called a geek comes with a certain image.
There is still that ingrained thing within me that is a little bit embarrassed about it.
In reality, geek culture has never been more mainstream, and behind every geek is a real story.
My dad was the one who got me into Star Wars and things.
Join me, your super dummy Paul, as I continue my learning experience and talk to the real people.
I'm a secondary school teacher, so I teach 11 to 16-year-olds in English.
Hear their stories exclusively on Fantastic Universes.
He's one of them, like, you're ever going to grow up? And I'm like, no, why should I? I like my life. I enjoy what I do. This is my hobby.
Available on all your favourite podcast catchers.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Indie Comic Spotlight, the show where we do a deep dive into an ongoing series or graphic novel from a company other than the big two. We love the big two, but they don't need our help. But here today is another creative corner. I love creator corners because the nerd in me, the 8-year-old kid who always dreamed of being a comic creator, and then the 16-year-old me who wandered into 666 Fifth Avenue when I was in New York for the first time, to DC Comics Studios and be like, hey, I'm here. And they were like, yeah, you're nobody, get out. But it was cool, I walked in the door. So here I am now talking to creators about their amazing Eurotech comic that I was coming out soon. It's coming out soon, people. And I was lucky enough to get a copy of it early and I love it. And so I've got the creators, I've got the writer, I've got the artist. They're here to talk about it all the way from parts unknown, somewhere in Europe. We're not sure if Europe even exists anymore. Jeff, welcome to Indie Comic Spotlight.
Hey, how's it going?
No, we know Europe still exists. It's just because England left doesn't mean you guys don't still exist.
The deepest, darkest corners of Berlin. Actually, it was pretty nice today. It wasn't that dark.
Was it nice? Okay, good, good, good. And it's late. He's staying up late and or getting up early for us. So thank you that. And the writer, you'll know him on the cover as Darren X Cape, but we know him as Sean. Sean, welcome to Indie Comic Spotlight.
Hey, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
This is so cool. I love it. This is one of the coolest things about doing a nerd comic podcast is like, people are like, here's a free comic. I'm like, what? You're giving me this? And it's awesome. So before we get into Xscape and that not safe for work cover and not safe for work book, and this is a not safe for work podcast. I know one of you has a Rugrat running around, I saw. So swearing is allowed. I don't know how loud I am in your house. So if we drop an F-bomb.
My Rugrat drops F-bombs, so don't
sweet-o.
Worry.
Sweet-o. Well done, sir. Well done. So before we get into that, before we get into teaching children to swear properly, it's important that they
properly. They have to swear properly. That's my rule.
That is key.
Exactly. Key. If you're going to do it right.
Don't. Yeah. It's not. You got to say that's a fucking hot dog, not a hot fucking dog. You got to teach them where to drop the things, right? So, but before we get in there, let's talk. Everybody who's new, they do their comic book origin story. So Jeff, you can go first. Young Jeff, there he is. So tell us what was your first comic? What did you love? Why? And then of course you're a creator. So now here you are drawing your own comic. So what was that journey? Please take us on it.
Well, I mean, you know, my dad was a cartoonist and illustrator, and I was very lucky to have been encouraged. I mean, from the time I popped out, I was holding a pencil practically. And I was really lucky to have access to a massive library of art and cartooning and comics. And so I was steeped in this stuff from a very young age. And, you know, it was really what I wanted to do up until the time I went to high school. And, you know, I grew up in the 90s and it was like all Image all the time. Todd McFarlane was my guy, you know, but I grew up reading, you know, Pfeiffer's book, The Great American Superhero, Smithsonian Collection of Comics. So I knew all these other sort of weird stuff that was out there. And I was really, that was my calling until I was in high school. And in high school, you know, I discovered punk rock and partying and girls. And it was like, I was moved more into art. And so I went to school and got an art degree and taught for a while in fine art. And it's funny that you mentioned New York because I had a sort of burgeoning career, and I moved to New York with my wife, and it was like, oh, I had done a couple of projects in the US, and I thought, oh, they're going to roll out the red carpet for me here in New York. And then we got there, and it's like, maybe not so much.
Like, oh, another really talented artist, get in line.
Yeah, exactly. So I did a lot of stuff. I was doing stand-up comedy in New York, and we kind of made a nomadic change, as we were wont to do, and moved to Berlin. And when I moved here, I was kind of searching for, you know, what my artistic calling was going to be. And it occurred to me when I got here, I was kind of in the depths of a Berlin winter, and I randomly caught a show on YouTube. And it was guys that were my age, and they were talking about Wizard, this cartoonist kayfabe. Shout out to those guys, Jim Rugg and Ed Piskor.
Oh, Jim Rugg. Oh.
They're great, right? Oh, they're great.
So
and
good.
They were starting that podcast right as I moved to Berlin. And it just, I mean, the wave of nostalgia was physical, seeing that Wizard magazine number one that I had got. That was like, you know, that was my world in those days. I just took a 30-year detour. And so I moved back to Berlin and started working on comics whole hog again, and put out a couple of my own books, and then contacted Sean randomly on the internet, and we hit it off, and the story was great. And, you know, that's what it is now. So
that's awesome. I have not had Jim on, but if you could make that happen, let's make that happen. I had Cecil on, Cecil Castellucci,
and she, okay.
She did the Plain Janes with Jim. And
fantastic book. Big plug for that one too.
That's
I just read it
book.
Actually on my trip to Canada. I randomly found it for like a cheap price. And
yeah,
like,
she's
wow,
Canadian. So she's probably just going around dropping it randomly at bookstores. Like, here, buy my book. Yeah, that was, I love Jim Rugg.
Fantastic
Street,
book.
Yeah, Street Angel too. That's cool. That's an excellent story. So Sean, you got to top that story. Your turn.
I don't know if I can top it, but I can pile on. So yeah, pile I have a different on. Background. Like I wasn't really a comic book kid. I was more of a movie kid. You know, we were making Super 8 movies in the basement. You
were
know,
there aliens? Was that Wars, you? You were the star of that movie?
Yeah, exactly. we were doing, you know, like, you know, ketchup. We saw Halloween and we made horror movies with a bunch of ketchup and, you know, and a kitchen knife. And we saw Star Wars. We made a bunch of Star Wars movies in the basement with, you know, sparklers sticking out of, you know, paper, you know, spaceships flying down, you know, wires that you could very obviously see. There were no blue screens. But I kind of, you know, what was in my world was Mad Magazine and, you know, National Lampoon. I used to read, you know, Spy versus Spy all the time. I love the Spy versus Spies. As I got older, you know, I went and I studied film. I ended up making a bunch of documentary films. When I found comic books, I was always kind of really interested in comics, but I never had the older brother reading them. I never had anyone I knew, really knew had them. I picked up Watchmen at one point, and I was just like, oh my God, this is so good and so cool. And the visual storytelling coming from like someone who was into film, it was really amazing to see how sophisticated the visual storytelling was, way more sophisticated than, you know, a lot of cinema. The storytelling was, you know, complex and funny and sarcastic. And that was definitely my vibe. I was kind of like a Frank Miller, Dark Knight guy, you know, the darker, the better for me. I liked seeing Batman turned on its head. I was never like a superhero guy where I never got really into the superheroes, but I liked seeing, you know, the psychological dimension of Batman being a bit of a psychopath, dealing with this pain in his past. That's what appealed to me. You know, Mouse came into my life at some point, and that was like, wow, I didn't know you could do that. I mean, Art Crumb and what was going on in the 70s was just really cool. People were exploding everything. And these guys, like, they weren't going to listen to the comic code authority. They were selling their stuff in head shops. They were doing whatever the hell they wanted. You know, and that was definitely my generation, you know, growing up with Animal House and, you know, and that kind of really 70s sarcastic thumb in the man kind of stuff was what appealed to me and all my friends. You know, later I found some of the indie, you know, comic books. You know, I was into Matt Wagner's Mage was something we all got into. Actually just picked up Grendel because I never got into Grendel as a kid. Oof. So I'm reading Grendel now. I'm catching up on stuff. Yeah. So I just love comics now. I missed a lot as a kid. And it's funny, whenever I'm around, you know, comic fans, it's always like, I've loved this since I was 5 years old. And I don't have that, right? So I'm coming from a different place. But
we're not gatekeepers on this show, man. You love what you love. I mean, you come to it when you come to it. You come to it when you're this old or when you're eight or whatever. Like, that's why I want to do the comic origin stories, because I think all that matters, right? We don't want to be gate. I don't like artistic gatekeepers. You love what you love when you love it. It's okay.
Yeah. And the great thing about comic books, like any art form, is it can be anything. It doesn't have to be superheroes. It doesn't have to be, you know, what it was, you know, I mean, in the 30s, 40s and stuff, you know, great artists, great stuff, but it doesn't always have to be that. It was kind of like, you know, what happened to independent film in the 80s when cameras became inexpensive and people were able to make films on shoestring budgets. It exploded what was possible, right? You know, you had traditional Hollywood, then you had the new Hollywood of the 70s, but then it just blew open with independent films. And I think the same thing is going on, you know, with comics, because the barrier to entry is low, right? You don't need, you know, you don't need a ton of money to get started. And so that's my interest, is really pushing it and taking it where, you know, where it can go. Actually, what's interesting is I wrote Erotech as a novel at first. You know, I was writing it as a novel, and I got about 150 pages into it, and I was thinking, who the hell is going to buy this? Like, who the hell is going to, what publisher is going to sell this story about, you know, an office comedy about a company that makes sex robots? I just couldn't see any kind of path in the traditional publishing world for someone who was completely unknown. So when I started doing comics, I was like, yeah, of course I can do this here. And I don't even have to worry about it. I don't have to think about it. I'm just going to do exactly what I want, you know? And then I was lucky enough to meet Jeff, and we just kind of gelled. And so now we can do this story exactly the way we want to do this story, and nobody can tell us not to or to do it differently. And that's just awesome.
It is awesome, because I am a novelist, and I have two novels in a collection of essays that I'm continuing racking up. The one that I just got, the rejection I just got yesterday as we're recording this, it said, your writing is beautiful and I really liked it so much. She requested the full novel, and she's like, I just don't have space in my catalog for it right now. So I'm going to pass. It was a publisher, an indie publisher. And that's just how it is. Cause you're like, oh, and it is, that is the last gatekeepers are on novels, but comic books, if you do it, if you record a song, you put it up on Spotify, you're a DIY hero, right?
Right.
If you make a film on your iPhone. So I do love that idea that you're like, oh, I've got a story to tell and I want people to get it. And honestly, your cover, Jeff, is going to get people to buy it, man. You knew what you were doing by putting that image on the cover. And that's exactly it. It's like a movie poster, right? The reason that trailer people make their money in the movie industry and movie posters matter. If you get a lame, shitty movie poster, nobody's going to go see it. I mean, it used to be that way. This comic cover, if I'm in my old comic shop and I see this, I'm like, what the hell is that? That's awesome.
I hope so.
It's totally true.
Well, and that's the last thing I'll say is that, you know, I cannot, you know, I did not come out of my mother's womb with a pencil in my hand. I'm probably the worst artist I know. And so what's great is that this is like fully collaborative. I could never have realized this without Jeff. He brings everything to it. And that's just awesome as well. You know, so it's been great, because it's not something I can do on my own. So I need you, man.
And it's a great, and you're doing you do the letters too, Jeff?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's we're doing digital lettering just to save some time, which, you know, I think if you give me another 2 months, maybe I'd letter it too, which I maybe would prefer to do. I letter my own book, but it's so much easier, and there's such quality out there that as long as you kind of know what you're doing to finesse it, you can get by.
Yeah,
so
you're right. The 20th anniversary collector's edition, we'll have that.
You'll hire Clayton Cole, right? And you'll be we're gonna get Clayton to come in and re-letter it.
Exactly.
It's funny, I did Cowboy Ninja Viking on here with a friend of mine. And I made him read that. And he's like, what the fuck is this comic? And then we spent like a half an hour talking about how the hero of Cowboy Ninja Viking is Clayton Coles, the letterer. And you're just like, what he does in that comic. So you're totally right, Jeff, that lettering, when done the way, but you do, the fact that you're doing it digitally though, you have the nuance that you need. And that's why I asked who was doing the letter, because I feel there's nuance there. I think even the logo, the Erotech logo is smart. It's right on the cover. And then you see it throughout the book. So there's just enough nuance there. So you knew, you're like, it's not just going to be black blocky letter. I think it's there. So I like it, but yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. I think it works.
I need to send you the executive edition, because it's got 12 additional pages of process, mood sheets, all kinds of stuff that we were working on. So after this call, we'll get, you know, we'll get you on the hookup with the executive edition in print.
What? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But I do appreciate that though, because I mean, you know, my day job and how I've, you know, paid the bills a lot of times supplementarily. I mean, I guess it's still being an artist, but it's like the part that they don't talk about, you know, the starving artist, nobody wants to be starving. You get to do something to buy food. Right. But I've been a designer for 25 years. So, you know, that's, I've always heard that, you know, you want to be the last one to touch something. And that's been great to sort of have the freedom from Sean to be able to like really, you know, tweak every part of it and really make something that I think will really stand out for people.
Yeah, it works. It works really well in the way that you frame a shot too. But before we get into that, before I start waxing poetic about, and you can tell now that I know Sean, you come from the film background. So I definitely want to talk about your script. Because I think that'll be fun to talk about, you know, with that. I've had a couple of other people who've told me, I wrote this as a screenplay and I turned it into a comic book. And so that's always fascinating to me to see how you make that change. And you went from novel to comic, but you've got a film background. So it'll just be cool to hear. So before, and again, this is the worst part of any time you guys talk about a comic, but again, we don't want to spoil what happens here. Somebody may or may not get his dick ripped off in this comic. We don't know. That is the tease. But with that in mind, who wants to give us the pitch? So people are like, ooh, I want to get on this. I want to buy it. And then I want to support the next Kickstarter that's coming out right now.
I'll let Sean take that one.
Yeah, the pitch I've been using is that it's like Silicon Valley, but the company makes sex robots, right? So it's definitely an office comedy. You know, it's interesting when you read the comic, the first four or five pages, rock 'em, sock 'em. Somebody may or may not get their dick ripped off. You're right in the middle of the action. But then, you know, the next 20 pages of the comic book, 22 pages of the comic book is office. Nobody's getting their dick ripped off.
But they talk about it a lot.
They talk about it a lot. You got to talk about it if it happens. But, you know, we're developing, you know, I really want to develop character. I want you to really care about the protagonist. I want this to be, you know, that was the thing when I first had this idea, because I work in tech and I've sat through all these, you know, software design meetings, and the idea of like a software design meeting and debugging a sex robot just became too funny to me. But turning that into a story, you've got to have a lot more to it. So yeah, there's a lot of just, you know, general kind of office comedy. If you work in technology, I think the sense of humor will really tickle you. And then of course we have to end with a bang. But yeah.
Oh man. Well, I work in academics and it works for me because there's always the stuff that happens. There's obviously lots of shade. Our protagonist is a woman. It's a female executive at a sex robot company. There's a whole conversation when she wants to launch the lesbian. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but when she wants to launch the lesbian doll line, that is like milk out the nose funny. Not that she wants to launch the lesbian sex doll. That's not funny. What happens on the following panels? I mean, that is like, don't drink anything while you're reading, because that is hysterical. And I think anybody who's worked in industry where women are treated poorly, which is every industry, will be like, oh, I know that douchebag who was talking to my boss that way. Like I work and almost all of my bosses are women and have been in academics. And there's always still that dude who's like, well, I'm a tall white dude, so I'm going to totally talk down.
Yeah, and that honestly is the thematic subtext. I mean, that's, you know, you have an industry where you're selling a sex robot and the protagonist has to be a woman, and she's a woman making her way in a not only hyper male but kind of puerile hyper male environment, lends to the comedy, and it works thematically as well. And that's where a lot of this is going to go over time.
Nice. That's awesome. I think it's hysterical. I laughed a lot. And I do think there's lots of really good jokes. And one of the things I noticed, Jeff, is I'm a big fan of Mark Russell and Steve Pugh's Flintstones run. And I don't know if you read that, but
No, like, I haven't. I've heard it's great.
Satirical genius is what the two of those guys are together. And what I see is, and so you guys haven't read it, but I see like the DNA there because they're satire. And what Mark and Steve do is Mark writes a script, right? Sean, you wrote a script, and then you're like, go do stuff. So you got all kinds of shit going on in the background. So the question is, how much of the shit going on in the background, the guy in the glass room in the background and the other things that are happening, how much of that is just you, Jeff, like, ooh, I've got space, I want to draw a joke here? And how much of that was you, Sean, saying, here's the joke I want back there. I know you guys said it was collaborative. So how did you, because the overt stuff is overt, but you've got, this is a rereader. You got to go back and look a few times. So how did that decision to get made to put the jokes in the background too?
That's him. You know, I mean, I wrote the stuff in the foreground. The one thing we talked about in the novel, all the conference rooms in the company are named after porn movies. So, you know, there's the Behind the Green Door conference room, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so I mentioned to him that I wanted to make sure that the names of the conference rooms were visible, although not highlighted. But beyond that, like, he just went wild, man. I'm not going to even talk because he did it. He put all that stuff in the background.
You know, I think really, I mean, my sort of one of the big through lines for me, and I'm, you know, it's good that you said Mad Magazine, because one of the big through lines for me is the early Mad stuff, like Will Elder and, you know, the sort of chicken fat stuff where it's like the panel is packed with 500 jokes, you know? And obviously I'm no Will Elder, so I can't pull that off. But in my own small way, I think... It would be difficult in a book like this where you have really strong characters to kind of forget that they're in a world. And so I wanted to make sure that the company was populated and it wasn't just these characters who worked there, because I think that would kind of take you out of it a bit, take you out of the sense that it's a place and a company and something like that. So I wanted to make sure that there was other people in the panels doing things, but the background stuff is just, you know, this is supposed to be a funny book. It's a hilarious story. Let's just go a little bit Looney Tunes with it, right? Because it's like a Looney Tunes world that's taking on some kind of poignant issues. And I kind of like that dichotomy a bit.
And it works really well too, because like there's a panel. I mean, like early on, pretty early on, as soon as you make the move from the like the you know, punch in the mouth stuff to somebody may or may not get the dick ripped off to the next panel, there's like a real conversation. We meet our protagonist and she's angry and she's like, you know, you've got her in the foreground. She's even doing the choppy hand that I'm doing that nobody can see. But then in the background, there's like a really funny gag. So when everybody gets to that page, the 10:39 a.m. page, look in the background. It is worth your time. And again, I read it and then I was like, wait, there's not a head. And that was brilliant. That was just like, and again, no dialogue. And I think what's really good too is like you guys are saying, having the world populated, because office comedies often, it's only these eight people. You're like, that can't be true. Somebody else must be there. And so
exactly. You
acknowledge this, like News Radio is my favorite office comedy of all time, but there's only eight people on that show. And you're like, it's a radio station. It can't run with eight people, no matter how good Phil Hartman is. He needs somebody else to work there. So I think,
and honestly, I mean, that's the beauty of the comics medium. You know, it's like you're saying, it's like, you know, kind of what Sean described when he's talking about reading it. I mean, Watchmen, I mean, look, you can film the scenes, but the subtext that's going on in that book is really only possible in comics. And that's the kind of thing you can't really do in a TV show, you know, maybe in an animated show. But if you wanted to do like a Grey's Anatomy, I don't think you could have like a Will Elder style joke. You can't pause the TV to look at everything on the screen. And so, you know, that's where comics, you know, helps really sell the concept and make it great.
Right. And Sean, your budget's unlimited, right? So when you're writing this script,
exactly.
So you're like, I got an unlimited budget. I can make this as crazy banana shit as Kurt Vonnegut-y as I want.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about hiring more actors. And actually, I'm writing issue two right now. And, you know, we're really deliberately blowing open the world. Like this episode, this issue, there's only one scene outside of the office. It's just one page. Right. We're going to go outside of the office. And the next one, there's going to be other characters, you know, but the thing we were mentioning about the robot in the background with the head off, I think a lot of what we talked about is we didn't want to make these robots like just hyper sexy in the sense that we don't want you to be aroused reading this comic book. We want you to be amused and slightly terrified, right? Because you're building a machine that has sex with you. There's, you know, you've got a physical thing there that has got to have, you know, it's got pieces and parts and they're not going to quite work right. And the skin is a little weird and the joints are a little weird. Everything's just slightly off in a way. And that was our through line. And Jeff, I think, did that beautifully, but that's the idea of the robots in the background too, where there's like a robot with its head off, because this is a company that manufactures, right? So there's got to be pieces and parts everywhere. When you go down in the warehouse, you know, it's all chest elements, right?
Basically. That joke, I was not expecting it to pay off right away, where there's like, you should probably check out with this. And then you see the wall. And again, it's a show. And what you do, again, is you show, don't tell. And this is where, Sean, if you had done this as a novel, you would have to have described that. But you're like, Jeff, I need this. And then he makes it happen. So that where the comics medium allows for the psychic. I don't know that that joke would have worked in the written word as well, because you need to just see it. It's like the scene in the first Police Squad movie where the guy's got, when the waiter takes his order, he turns around, he's got no pants on. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And the loaded weapon. No, not loaded weapon. What the hell were those called? The ones, Leslie Nielsen. So he turns around, like he's just sitting there. They're having their conversation and he's got, it looks like a waiter. And if you don't notice, there's a guy's ass on the screen because he just walks away. Right. So
Naked Gun. Yeah.
Naked Gun. So the same. Yeah. So like in that basement scene, when you go down, you're set, it's world building, but also you're like, oh, right. You told us this joke was coming earlier. It was pretty good.
That's why the collaboration's great, because it isn't just a written piece. And so you can't, you know, that's why I like, you know, I mean, Jeff does his thing. And he's got the jokes in the background and can visualize things. And I do my thing. And together, it's way more than it could be individually, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about that. So like there are some, and again, when we meet Jill works in the call center, the help center, which is awesome. Again, a brilliant move. Of course, you need somebody who has to deal with, you know, tech and deal with the customer complaints. So I love her, with her cubicle mates who are next to her. The one guy's picking his nose. The one guy may be dead. I can't tell. And it may not matter. That's all great. But what I wonder is, so you've got these cool visual elements and you're layering the story. So you wrote a novel, then you switched it to a comic, you know, script, and then you give it over. So what was that? Let's talk process, the real super fun part. But I think it will be fun to hear. So you found Jeff looking for an artist for this, or... And you were like, he's the guy. Like, what was your process, Jeff, Sean, to make the move? And then how did you find Jeff? And then Jeff, I want to know, when you saw this script, in what form did it look? And how did you know you wanted to do it?
Yeah, you know, we got really lucky in the sense of, I was on Global Comics because I was thinking about maybe putting stuff on Global Comics. And they had a board for talent. I forget what, you know, just a section of the website. And I clicked on it and... looking around for artists, and there weren't a whole lot of people out there at this point, because it had just kind of been a new feature on Global Comics or something. Yeah. And, you know, I just fired off one of those emails into the void. You know, I got, you know, I've got a sex robot script. You interested? You know, psst, hey kid, you want to
talk like you robot? Do. That's just a thing you send out. You're like, God, I hope you don't get arrested. Send.
Yeah. Yeah. Like yeah. You do. He was in Germany. I figured, what's the worst he can do? I don't even know if I knew.
I
he
know
was in
all
Germany.
About the sex robots yeah. here. In
Yeah, no, and honestly, I could not have found a better collaborator, and it was so freaking random. I wish I could say I did it thoughtfully and I looked and whatever. I mean, it was a shot in the dark, and wow.
I mean, it's really the same for my end. I mean, I randomly put a job. It's not like I was like submitting portfolios to the big two or whatever, you know. And you were talking about the indie stuff. That's the stuff that's near to my heart now as I've come back. And I just randomly was like, nah, whatever. I'll put a post up here. You know what the heck? Maybe I'll get, you know, some cover stuff or pinups or stuff. And he came to me and it was like, okay. And I have to be honest, when you see, you know, somebody pitching a sex robot script, the first inkling is, okay, well, this has got to be terrible, right? It's got to be, you know,
but I want to read it anyway,
or whatever. Yeah. And, but no, I read it. I was like, oh, this is actually really clever. This is not, you know, just your run of the mill kind of crap script. What I would expect on a comic posting board, or like, you know, this very new, untested sort of site too. But yeah, it was fantastic to get to find it. It was just total kismet.
Well, it's a great, collaboration. So yeah, no. So when you made the move, Sean, what did that script look like? Was it, cause you had 150 pages, so you must have quite a bit of the story already scripted. So how many pages did you send Jeff? What does your script look like? Is it look like a movie script, or does it, I mean, cause
no,
I
sent him a comic book script. I sent him. Okay. So yeah, I mean, I did a 28 page, you know, comic book script. And, you know, actually it was really great to take it from a novel to a single issue, right? I actually really like working serially in a way, because I get kind of, I mean, you write novels, I get kind of lost in the middle. Like you get 150 pages in, you're like, where am I? And what, you know, what's the momentum at this moment? And how is the arc coming together? And I have trouble. I get lost in the big structure. So taking that I mean, I had, you know, the opening scene, and it really was not hard. There was so much material. I took all the dialogue pretty much straight from the novel.
Nice.
Tweaked it a little bit. But yeah, it was like the first, this was the third comic book I had produced. I had done two others. So I knew what I was doing, in terms of writing the script. You know, with Jeffrey was different in the sense of I was writing it, you know, much more like I would direct a film, like slightly camera angles and other thing. And he was like, yeah, no, I mean, you know, let's do it a little more like Marvel, where you just tell me the scene. And actually that worked out great, because honestly, for the office scene, like you're in a conference room and there's dialogue. Well, I'm not gonna, what can I do? I don't want to tell him how to draw it and who's in what frame. And so it was actually great to be able to just turn that over. I mean, the one thing was, you know, in the original script, I didn't want anyone seen except the robot and Steve, the QA tester. Everybody else was behind glass in the control room. You know, that was the one thing I kind of put in the script, that, you know, just word bubbles or, you know, silhouettes coming out of the glass. But, you know, for the most part, it was great for this one, particularly because of the office scenes, to just hand it over. And then, you know, he did an ash can and we looked at it and we went through like page by page multiple times, like fine tuning the jokes, you know, trying to one joke per panel, you know, in terms of the dialogue. There can be funny stuff in the background, but trying to hit the beats right, trying to get the words just right. And Jeff, you know, was a great collaborator, not only in terms of the art, but in terms of the dialogue. You know, we were back and forth. You know, there's one line about, you know, I should have graduated high school, and was that too harsh? And, you know, and we went to trade school, you know, but we like, you know, went back and forth on it. So I would say the script was pretty done for a first draft, but we definitely worked it from there together.
Nice.
And I will say too, the one thing I really like about the script in general, but about Sean's writing, and I mean, you know, and being somewhat of a film sort of buff, I wouldn't call myself into film, or I haven't ever tried to write a script or anything like that. But the one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, the economy of dialogue is really important. You know, brevity is really important. And I think that's even more so when you're talking about writing a comic. Because I know even in my own work, sort of coming back and trying to write, and it's like first efforts are always sort of just word salad all over the place. Even if it's not captions, it's like people are just blah, 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 blah. You want to fill up space with word balloons. And that's the great thing about his writing, is that there's a great quick rhythm to it. It doesn't say more than it needs to. It doesn't, you know, get in the way of the story itself. And it was very quick and concise. And I really think that helps the reading and the pace, and really makes it works well with the art. It was easy to write around or draw around it, I guess. Maybe that's a good way to put it.
Well, and it moves everything forward. And that's really important too, because you have one of my favorite scenes is early on when Steve and the robot are having their problem. And you said the people, so there's like a really up close scene where like he's in danger and your coloring is really green and everything. And you make him green at one point. And then there's laughing coming from the windows up above. And like, that tells you everything that you need to know about how they feel about Steve. Because if they really give a shit about Steve, they're not laughing. They're terrified. Like, they know the whole company could go down. This is all bad. But they're laughing their asses off up there. But I was like, oh, I get what this is immediately. And that was a really great shorthand. We haven't met anybody, but you've told us everything we need to know. So I thought that was a really smart move too. Getting out of your own way, right, Sean?
Yeah, and I really do try to keep the dialogue at a minimum. If there was one change I made from the novel to the comic book script, it was that. I mean, if something goes on more than a sentence, I'm really skeptical. And it actually really helps to try to reduce it to just what you need. You know, it's a visual medium, right? Nobody, yeah. I mean, maybe it's me. I don't want to read too many words, right?
You don't subscribe to the Claremont School of X-Men?
Yeah, exactly.
Imagine.
I don't want a lot of captions. I don't want a lot of narration. I want the characters and the dialogue and the art to drive it, right? And the art to drive it with the dialogue. So yeah, I tried really hard to do that. So it's nice to hear that it's appreciated, and that it also does it's a visual medium, you know. Too many words, no good.
Yeah, one of my favorite working comic book writers, he does film too, is Brian Edward Hill. And what he does, he did Postal and he did the reboot of Angel and he did American Carnage, which was epic. I don't know if you guys ever read that, but what he does And he's a great writer. And he wrote, like, he's a writer and executive producer on the Titans TV series. Like, he's all over Brian Edward Hill. But he's this guy, right? He's Brian Edward Hill is writing comics, so he can do whatever the fuck he wants. But he's like, in that Postal series, there'll be like six pages with no words, but you can see his DNA all over it. You can see he wrote it. You know what he wants. And he's like, I'm going to get out of my way. And I think that's got to be one of the harder things for writers. Obviously, Chris Claremont didn't do it. And I love those Chris Claremont X-Men. I'm not here to shit on Chris Claremont. Who the hell am I? But man, dude, you don't need to give a full description of Wolverine on every other page. We got it. You got to trust the reader a little. And sometimes with his stuff, it's like I would have hated to been one of his artists because it'd be like, where's my space?
Yeah.
Well, I think you do a fantastic job and it works. It works. And it's hard, you know, because the writer's name, it's the writer's book. It's your book. This is your baby, man. You were writing a novel and now you're like, I'm totally going to trust somebody else to do my work for me. And that's a big thing. So obviously that shows you guys are great partners because you're like, all right, man.
It's my film background too. Show, don't tell, right? It's a visual medium. It has to be told visually. And I don't even feel like I'm just passing it off because, you know, like I said, we collaborate on it. And, you know, I mean, he's coming up with this great stuff, but we're talking about it and we're, you know, adjusting it. And for me, I really care about the flow of the story. Like when you read top to bottom of a page, it should just flow. Like you shouldn't wonder what you're looking at or where you are or what happened, whether it's 1 second that passed or 10 minutes that passed. It has to have that easy flow where you're just reading right through it and the story's coming in. And so that to me is way more important than the dialogue, right? You know, so how, on the other comic books I've worked on, I've done a little bit more of that probably because the artists are less experienced than Jeff, you know? So with Jeff, it's really just like going back and forth on what he's come up with, but I really do care about that. It's a visual medium and I have no ego about it. I don't need to fill a page with words.
That must be fun for you then, Jeff, to be like, cool, look at my sandbox.
Well, I mean, it is. And we're lucky to have found each other and found somebody that was so willing to collaborate and sort of let me do my thing. But, you know, I have to say, the story suggests, you know, and I think if you're telling the story, then the storytelling is important, you know, and the story itself is so vivid and it's really just sort of, you know, lending itself to, you know, kind of interesting ways to tell the story because, you know, as you mentioned, it's a lot of it is the office. So you have to really sort of try and think about, well, how can I heighten the reactions? How can we play this up so that it's not just people sitting around in an office talking? And, you know, I think the tone of it really helps too. I mean, that's one of the things I think is really important to the book is the color and the tone of it, because, you know, I think that also sort of is a really nice key to what the humor brings and the sort of feeling that I want to get across. You know, I think it's really important to make it as heightened as possible. Cause again, the story is fairly down to earth with the exception of the set piece, you know, it's an office comedy. And I think the crazier we can make it around that, the more the story shines through. So yeah, it was really nice to be able to play around and really go a little bit nuts.
Yeah. And with those opening pages, nobody's going to wonder why you're getting crazy. Cause you set the bar high.
Oh man.
Yeah, exactly. Liberates us. Right. You know, then, you know, you can do anything once you've had someone have their dick almost ripped off.
I think it's really, it's really funny too. And the way that opening shot is framed intentionally. And you said, Sean, you're like, you're not supposed to be aroused, but you're like, I'm just going to push your button here just a little.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a love letter to the Stepford Wives in here, obviously. I mean, you can't, that's obvious. You mentioned all the office comedies. Again, I always think, I mean, there's plenty of great office comedies. This News Radio just always hit me. I'm old, so News Radio always hit me right in my heart.
Great show.
I love that show. And I think there's a lot of that there because all the shorthand on that show, you know, you had one new character. Now, there's not a new character here. They're all here. Steve is essentially the new character and they all hate Steve. You know, they're like, he's such a tool and they don't care about him. And they're like, yeah, that's lunch. We don't care. But because Samantha intentional, and again, very well done. Shorthand, you do it perfectly. like Steve Aruski, and then everybody wants to call her Sam, and she's always correcting them. And I appreciate that she doesn't give up on that. Like that again tells you everything about the history of these people with just a few small words. She constantly has to, this isn't her first day at work. Everybody fucking knows she doesn't want to be called Sam. You've heard this before. So I think that's really smart too. And so I just really like, I agree, the pacing is so beautiful. And I just wanted to, I read it and I immediately turned around and read it again. And then I read it again this morning for this. And I got something new today reading it again. You know, I just think it's so great.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I mean, I know that wasn't a question or anything. I just wanted to say it all because I feel that way. I like art, man. And I think art matters. And I think satire matters. You do both satire and farce here. You lean more, but you said, Greg, you know, it's a little, you know, it's all in the real world except for the set piece. But I'm telling you, this is happening somewhere right now.
Exactly.
This is not super far-fetched to me. I mean, nothing you've done here. That's why Stepford Wives work, because you're like, oh yeah, totally. If they could do that to those women, they would do that. So you're like, sure. If this could happen, this would happen.
Well, we set this 5 minutes in the future, right? I mean, we're going towards self-driving cars. We already have all kinds of sex dolls. It's not a big leap of the imagination. What the fun part is to not imagine that they exist and they're perfect, but that they have to actually be made and what would actually be involved with that.
And you know, the testing,
customer support, you know, somebody's in trouble here and you got to help them out over the phone. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's so great. I think that because you always know, like, and that's a play on the, you know, if you've had an erection for more than 4 hours, please call your doctor. That's happening here.
Not to mention, I mean, how many thousands of phones have to be recalled because they randomly catch on fire in your pocket, you know?
Right.
That's just a phone.
Right.
Can you imagine if you've got a robot?
And you're really capturing, and again, you mentioned like Samantha is our hero. She's our protagonist, but you're also commenting on the way that women are treated in the workplace, but you're also addressing the incel nature of this, who the target audience here, the reason when she brings up the lesbian doll, these douchebags can't understand why that would be a thing, because they're like, no, this is for incels. That's who this is for. That's our target audience. We don't want to branch out because why would anybody else? They're like, because the line, I'm just going to spoil it a little bit. The line is like, wait, so we would like have two and then we'd watch them? Like, and the look on her face, look on Samantha's face is brilliant. It's so
but then you could have a threesome afterwards, so it's all
then
right.
You could have a threesome afterwards, dude. That would be tight. Yeah, it was awful. And it's funny, you know, if anybody knows, you know, I went to college, so I knew people who weren't just straight people, and it never I never thought at any point in time, you know, my gay friends, my watching them make out was fun. You don't want to watch your friends make out. That's not a thing you do. It doesn't matter if they're gay or straight or whatever. You're like, get the hell out of the way. I'm watching Friends. Move your ass. Don't make out in front of the TV. So it's such a weird thought, but I love that that is such a weird fantasy thing that stupid douchebag incels have. And so you capture the zeitgeist. And of course, they would be working at this company.
Right. Sure. Huh. Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that Sean mentioned that 5 minutes into the future, because I think that's one thing about it that's really important too, and really important for me in terms of the art, is that we definitely didn't want to make it like, you know, sci-fi future kind of thing, because that sort of dates it. But at the same time, I also wanted to make sure that the tone of it was a bit throwback and retro, so it has a bit of a Mad Men kind of feel, because that's the other part of sort of reinforcing some of those themes that you're talking about. So I really wanted to make this weird mashup of time periods and make it, you know, hopefully that it seems a bit timeless because of that, is the idea anyway.
Yeah, because women being treated like shit is timeless.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, but it takes books like this, and I will say, I made a joke before we hit record. I'm like, oh, good thing this isn't a video show, because it'd be like three white dudes with glasses, the show. But what I love is it's three white dudes with glasses who love this. You guys wrote this book. I love this book. I can't wait to share this book with my friends and say, like, you guys got to fucking read this book. Let's get it. I'm going to support the new Kickstarter 100%. I can't wait to get issue 2. I'm like in. I'm all in now. So I appreciate you guys reaching out to Chris and Dave. And Dave sent me the email. He's like, hey, I just got this. And I was like, oh, this is Tony. He's going to love this. And he just sent it right on to me. So thanks to Chris and Dave, you know, the podfathers of the Comics in Motion Network. But so I appreciate, what I like is that there's, you make the comment about the white douchebag incel guys, but then you're also acknowledging you aren't those guys. Like, this is a very ally book. You're out, like, your hero is a woman. She's been put upon. Doesn't matter who you are, you like her. You like Samantha and you're on her side. And the people who aren't, you don't want them to buy your book anyway.
Yeah, and it's also, I think we can all relate to, regardless of the sexual politics, being in the office and trying to actually get something done and all of the nonsense that actually prevents you from moving forward on actually getting something done. So I think there's the sexual politics about it, and there's also just the reality of being in a company and trying to actually do something and working your way through all of the pushback and all of the personalities and all of the nonsense that's involved. You know, I think that's fairly universal.
Right, because you've got the coder, the guy with the Pac-Man on the front of his, and nice, he dropped the Ukraine flag in there too. That was a nice touch. But you've got the coder there, the Hugo Strange looking guy. I can't think of his name right now. He's definitely not Hugo Strange from Batman, but that's who he looks like to me. But he's that guy, right, Sean? He's like, he just wants to work and he stays up all night and he's trying to fix it and he's on no sleep and she brings him coffee and he doesn't care. He just wants to do his work, but right, all the bullshit that goes on. So that is, I feel really bad for him. His life sucks. He has to call his family, his wife, husband, whomever, and be like, I'm not coming home except to work out the Steve's dick bug. I got to work that out.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, you're hopefully, all these characters will be further developed in next issues. So Jill's got a big part to play. So yeah, there's lots to come here. And what's great is, having gone that far into the novel, I've thought that far ahead. So, hopefully what's going to come is good character development, good story development, expanding universe, and bringing you in further and further.
Yeah, it's great. And Greg, you mentioned the colors, and I want to touch on that, then we'll wrap up and you guys can pitch this to everybody and tell everybody how they can find you in the world. You mentioned the colors, you're doing your own colors, you're doing your own shading. I mean, like, you've got a guy with like 5 o'clock shadow shading. That's like a great touch. You didn't have to do that, but you're like, I'm going to put that on that guy because he looks miserable and he's got the big puffy eyes. So you do that, but you do the colors really well. And you let us know right from the beginning when Steve turns green for 3 panels and you're like, oh shit. So what was your choice there with background colors and foreground colors? How do you, like, you don't draw it with colors in mind, or once you see the finish, your finished thing, then you're like, here's the colors. And do you guys collaborate on the color palette too?
I maybe ran through my idea about how to color it by you. And we kind of talked about it a little bit that way, but
that's him, man. He ran it by me, but far be it for me to tweak his colors. He's, he's the master in that regard.
I think it's more, it is all about serving the story, right? I think that's what's so important about comics. It's what you have to do as a visual storyteller, as a cartoonist, as a comics artist, is you have to move the story along. It's all about readability. Like Sean said, there should never be a point when you think, oh, I'm confused as to what's going on here, because that messes with the pace, that messes with the story and the reading experience. So it was really important, again, sort of this idea of like, okay, how can we differentiate offices and these locations that may look all the same, is, again, heightening the color so that each sort of scene has its own color palette. And so I really tried to do that throughout the book, and then, playing the characters and stuff off the color palette that's there, and thinking about, okay, well, we're in a corporate environment, so obviously we're going to have a light, kind of a fluorescent cast. We have to make sure it's that kind of color. When it gets a little bit more tension, maybe it's darker blues and purples and things like that. So trying to keep the scenes very distinct so that you know where you are at every point in the story, even if it's a bit subconscious, I think was really important. So yeah. And like I said, it was a matter of then just kind of turning the saturation up to 11 and half toning the hell out of it, so I could, really get that true Mad Men kind of psychedelic vibe in there.
It's something, man. It really is. And then when you finally see the sex robot, full frontal sex bot for the first time towards the end, the coloring on that was like, oh shit, that's when it's totally uncanny valley. You're like, you're going to sell this? This is the product you're going to put out? Like, whoa. You guys are way beyond Steve's dick at this point. You've got some problems. It's really good. It's really good. I like it so much. So it's going to be an ongoing series in perpetuity. That's the plan.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the first book, I guess, will be probably about 5 issues. And that's going to take us through the launch of the new model, the Model 6000. And that actually, it's the SEX 6000, which for the total nerds out there is a reference to the SUX 6000, the car from RoboCop, the SUX 6000. But yeah, they're going to take it through the launch of the new product. And then, yeah, I mean, what we've said is as long as we don't feel like we're being repetitive, lost the spark, you know, cranking it out, we've got to have like, it's got to keep moving forward. We've got to be able to expand the universe. But yeah, I think this has the potential to have long legs.
Yeah, I do too. I can't wait. And, you know, one day we'll figure out why the fuck Steve has a heart tattoo on his arm. What the hell, Steve? What is up with you? You love love so much that you're fucking sex dolls for money and you think you need a raise. He is something. So good. So good. So good. Thank you guys for sharing this with me. Thank you for sharing this with the world. It is definitely not safe for work. I don't sit at work and read your sex doll book, but you should read it. It is funny. It's never, you know, like you said, it's not titillating. And I think that's important. This could go a different way, right? I'm doing a Sin City rerun on here. We're doing every 2 months, we're doing a different Sin City. We're on volume 5 now. And that's always the thing with Frank. You talked about Frank earlier, Sean, and how he's always right up on the edge of making you feel like he tries to titillate you a little much. And then he's like, oh yeah, look at, here's Nancy. She's naked. Remember, she was 11 when this book started. And then you're like, oh, kill me. So you make sure that you guys find that balance there. So I appreciate that because it's not supposed to be that. It's supposed to be uncomfortable and funny.
Yeah, we don't want to go for the cheap titillation. It's not nearly as interesting as weird and scary. And if you get titillated by it, you even feel a little weird, like
as you should.
And there's 5,000 books right up your alley out there for free on a torrent site. Go
right,
nuts,
yeah.
If you want.
Go do that instead. Comics. That's right. Totally true. Yeah, or when you're like accidentally click, you're like, oh, trying to find a movie online, and you click on a website thinking it's going to play something, you're like, whoa, all of a sudden there's ads for porn comics. So don't click on those, everybody. Those are bad for your computer. So this was fun. I am so excited. I can't wait for these to come out. So this is going to come out either a couple days after, a couple days before the new Kickstarter comes out. So all those links will be in your show notes, people. But let's tell everybody where they can buy the book that is almost out, issue 1 that I got to read, and tell them where they can find you and look at your other books that you're doing. So Jeff, you go first. Where's all your stuff?
You can find me on Instagram primarily, the Jeffrey K, GEOFFREYK. And I'm on Twitter at the_JeffreyK, I think. You can probably find me on
just
there.
Just the letter K because he's inside a Kafka novel, everybody. You don't get
to
know
his exactly.
Whole name. He's just K.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we also have a Twitter for the comic at Erotech Comic that, you know, we like to post kind of behind the scenes stuff and little snippets of stuff as we're ramping up. And that'll be kind of picking up once we have some new projects end of this year and then on to the second issue. So definitely want to give that a good follow. But that's about it for me.
Excellent. And that'll all be in the show notes. If you didn't remember all that and you're like, wait, did he say a Kafka novel? What's happening? You just click. Everybody just click. It'll be okay. Sean, what's up? Where's all your good stuff? You've got other comics. What's up?
Just type sex or sex robot into the search bar and you'll find us.
You'll be fine. Yeah, yeah, you'll nothing be fine. Else will ever happen.
No, everything is SHP Comics. So shpcomics.com. The only exception is Twitter. I have to be SHP_comics.
Whoa.
But everything else is SHP Comics. Website, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit. You know, it's all out there. Try to post regularly. Like I said, got 2 other comic books series that are in process as well. We've got some pretty cool swag we're offering. We got some great variant covers, you know, stuff for the discerning comic book reader.
Nice. And I think anybody who reads this is a discerning comic book reader. This is not, it's all the stuff that you heard them talk about. That's the stuff, Mad Magazine to Watchmen. And I think a lot of people who read Watchmen also read Mad Magazine. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lane that you guys are in. And I think that's okay. I don't think, not every book has to be for everybody, right? Well, you know, whatever you do, you find your niche. You do it well, and you're going to be, you know, rewarded. And I appreciate you guys. I appreciate artists who say, like you said, Sean, I don't need to, I'm going to do it my own way. And this is good. It's excellent work. And I really like it. And I'm just honored that I got a copy and can't wait to support the Kickstarter.
Thank you. And we're honored to be on the show, man. It's just great. And thank you.
This is so fun.
This is a great talk. A lot of fun.
Oh man. I love art, and I think it's important. And I think it's the way to change people. You change people with art, right? You can give them a lecture or you can show them something and then they'll get it later. I've raised kids and you know, the stuff you said when they were 8, it sinks in maybe later. You know, and in the time they're being an asshole about it, but when they're 18 or something, they're like, oh, that thing you said when I was 8, it makes sense now. And so, you know, good art will do that. You sit with it. And this is good art, you guys. It's excellent. I really like it. When you put it on Goodreads, I will give it 5 stars. I am excited to give you 5 stars on Goodreads. So there's going to be a playlist, I heard.
Yes. I probably should have prepared that, but you know, one of the things that we like to do is really make the experience, not just of the reading the comic, but everything around the comic fun. So, you know, we want to make sure that there's lots of stuff out there for the fans to latch onto. And I should have the link here.
It's a Spotify link, so it'll be in the show notes, right?
It'll be in the show notes, and I can just let you know that there is an official playlist on Spotify for it. And it's just a smattering of stuff having to do with robots and love. So.
Nice. So Aerotech, everybody look that up, Aerotech. And it's the Aerotech playlist, that's what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
The official Aerotech playlist.
Official. Yeah. Sorry, I don't want to
If it's not official, don't listen to it.
Don't listen to that bullshit, Aerotech. The official Aerotech. That's awesome. Aero with an E, everybody. So, what a great book. Thank you guys. I am excited to get this in the hands of people who are listening to this show and to the people I know in the Comics and Motion family. So thanks to Chris and Dave for sending this my way. They know me well enough to be like, oh my God, dude, your psychic soulmates have written a book and you should go talk to them. So thank you guys for writing this book. I can't wait to read more. And when issue 2 comes out and I get that in my hand, we'll do this again.
Definitely.
Sound good? So that'll be sometime in 2023. Issue 2 will be done.
Well, you know, just briefly, we're doing talking about expanding the universe. We're doing a parallel kind of story. So there's going to be a 12-page kind of special collector's edition coming up in September, and then issue 2 and the full on issue 2. And the parallel story is going to slam into the main story.
Oh my God.
So we got some fun stuff planned.
That's cool. It's like the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of Aerotech, everybody.
Exactly.
How amazing. Well, thank you guys. Click that playlist, buy their stuff, people, support art, and I will see everybody next time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, love.